shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Hi, good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of Shooting from the Lip with me, John Gaunt, on Sputnik International. Well, it's the week that Boris became the Prime Minister, the week when he still promised that he'd get us out of the EU by Halloween. Can he do it? And have we got a brighter future ahead of us? Can we trust Boris to deliver? We all know Theresa May was an absolute failure. Well, we've got a great guest for you today who should be able to give us the lowdown on all this. And that man is Stephen Wolfe, the former Brexit MEP, who I'm delighted to say joins me now.
Shooting from the lip.
Hi, Stephen.
Good afternoon, John, and thanks for being back on the show.
No problem. So are you optimistic? Is this the bright new future?
Yes, I am actually optimistic, John, because we couldn't have got a worse prime minister in Theresa May, a Remainer who became leader with a Remainer cabinet, a Remainer who controlled the House of Commons, Remainers who controlled the House of Lords, and of course, so many Remainers in mainstream media and in the Westminster bubble who have literally been crying in tears as though this is the death of democracy in the United Kingdom because there is a Brexiteer in charge of the government. And I'm hopeful that what we will now see from Boris, who does exude energy, a kind of go-getting attitude, which is what is needed to deliver Brexit, will have a cabinet mainly of Brexiteers in the key roles, but sends a very clear message out to the European Union and those who are opposing it that we will get this done by the 31st of October. So I'm hopeful, but we will have to be careful and watchful.
Yeah, we have to be careful because, of course, he wrote two letters, two articles. Is he a true Brexiteer, in your opinion?
I think he is a Brexiteer who recognises that democracy is on a very sticky wicket in the United Kingdom, and also his own political party, the Conservative Party, will be annihilated at a general election if they don't deliver Brexit. So I think in that sense, yes, I think he understands the damage the regulations will do and have done. He saw that when he was the leader of the London mayor, I should say. So he did comment on it. But is he a kind of diehard Brexiteer like myself or Nigel Farage, those in the Brexit party? Clearly not, because his tradition is that of a kind of more liberal metropolitan conservatism. But I do think he's got the spirit and heart to be able to try and push this through. The question is, when you've got so many Remainer conservatives who are of the really Liberal Democrats in disguise, there's no doubt about it, in the way that they're even talking about moving and defecting to the Liberal Democrats, then you've got those in the party who will try and bring him down. And that's a massive challenge he's got.
Well, that is. And the massive challenge is, how the hell does he get it through Parliament? I mean, Parliament have been defying the will of the people for the past 3 years. They're now saying this deal still has to go through. So how is he going to succeed in that? Do you think he will suspend Parliament? How does he achieve the objective?
I think this is a real deep technical constitutional issues that he's got to face. Firstly, he will have to select a cabinet that he believes that will actually work with him and give him that strength to be able to deal with the majority of the Conservative MPs and see that he can rally them through for a no-deal scenario. Secondly, in law, we do leave on the 31st of October without a deal, irrespective of whether Parliament votes for that or not. What they will try and do, obviously, is make him extend this and extend that. And that's when the real pressure points come in. Does he then decide that he can go to the country and offer an election, a general election, which I think if he does the right strategic deals with the Brexit movement, he would probably win and save the Conservative Party? Or does he try and face them down? I think the first thing he would have to do is try and face them down. Because if you don't face down those in your own party, then you haven't got the strength of a prime minister to be able to go off and carry on with your own issues, and that'll be the first test.
Understand that fully. Daniel Finkelstein wrote a great article in the Times on Wednesday, a very short article, but he basically said Boris's best option is to go to the country almost as soon as possible. And then, of course, the other news coming in this week is that Trump is welcoming his appointment and is saying that he and Nigel could work so well together. So would the, and then of course Farage now saying, I'll have a pact with you. Matt Hancock, the health secretary, says, no way, Jose. So how, out of all of that, wouldn't it be better just to do a deal with Nigel now, go to the country, and then get rid of all these MPs who, let's face it, do they really want to vote for Christmas like turkeys? Because they're finished, aren't they, when they go back to their constituents after what they've done the last 3 years?
Well, even with Boris in play, many of those Conservative MPs will lose their seats if they go to a general election, because there are a number of seats which are really very soft Conservative pro-Liberal Democrats. In Winchester, for example, that will become a Liberal Democrat seat, and Steve Bryan, the MP, who's not a Brexiteer Remainer, will lose his seat. So he's no interest for him to support Boris either way, I don't think, unless he can get a pact with the Brexit Party. And I think that's the necessity of politics in this country at the moment. You've got pacts being formed at the moment in the by-election in Wales between the Green Party, the Liberal Democrats and Plaid Cymru, who are giving a free rein, I believe, to the Liberal Democrats. Without Nigel Farage's and, you know, the Brexit Party that has been chaired by Richard Tice and the organisation that they've managed to get behind that and the voters and supporters they have, the Conservatives cannot win a majority on their own unless Boris manages to achieve Brexit on October 31st. So he has that dilemma. My view is that a Brexit Party coalition with the Conservative Party, notwithstanding what Matt Hancock and many of the Conservative MPs say that they don't want, that's the only way that he can win a general election.
So do you see that happening in the next, I don't know, he's got 100 days, hasn't he, to get Brexit sorted. Do you think that's going to happen in the next 10 or 20 days? Trump wants it. Farage is now saying, come on, let's talk. Do you think that's actually going to happen, or will it have to happen after he's tried to face them down? But you and I know he's not going to face down these Remainers, is he?
I think he will try and face them down in the first 20 to 30 days. I think you'll see some really strong action from him immediately, because he has to, John. If he doesn't do that, he will immediately have weakened his prime ministerialship from the start. So he has to start facing them down. And one of the first things he has to face down is Jeremy Hunt saying that I will not move from the Foreign Office. You have to you have to get a Remainer out of the Foreign Office. No one will persuade me that Jeremy Hunt ever converted to the Brexit cause. The Brexit cause to him was just a convenience in order to be able to achieve prime ministerialship. So he needs to go, because the FCO has been one of the biggest areas of government that has projected Project Fear and not being able to project the positive image that we can have with Brexit. Look at the way that they have an ambassador in the United States that insulted Trump and has put some serious damage and then provided the weaponry and assistance in negotiations, never to even put no deal on the table with the Department for Brexit during the negotiations with the EU. So he needs to be strong there. In the background, I guarantee there are conversations going on between the Brexit Party and those in government. The Leave Means Leave organisation had a cross-party mix. Richard Tice was heading Leave Means Leave. I know that obviously he's now in the Brexit Party. So they've got good contacts, good links between the two. And it would be churlish of them not to be having those conversations. It wouldn't be sensible politics.
OK, so what role would Farage want? I mean, this US ambassador thing doesn't go away. You've just talked about the Kim Darroch affair, and I think we've got similar views on that. Could Nigel Farage feasibly become the US ambassador?
I think it would be a very positive move for the Brexit movement to have somebody who knows how to talk to the President of the United States, has had good relationships with a number of senators and congressmen over there, and would be seen as a very interesting and charismatic figure, which is just what the United States do. He would obviously need to have a very strong team of support, because he is not a career diplomat, and those who are a strong team that would work with him on the key issues. But I'm not sure that Nigel entirely wants that. He has said in the past that he didn't want to be the ambassador to the United States. But I think it would be a good move all around for the Brexit movement. But again, what other opportunities is there for Nigel if he doesn't get that? I think a Brexit Party link up with the Conservatives, which either he moves into the House of Lords or into Parliament, would again also be an extremely positive sign that Boris is looking at the Brexit movement and wanting an incredibly positive way forward.
When you say a pact, do you mean sort of we won't compete against you in that seat or that constituency if you don't compete against us? Or are you saying actually going to the country whereby certain Brexit MPs would be guaranteed to win, sorry, candidates, because the Tories would almost semi-promote them? Or is it a pact after an election?
No, I think it's got to be a pact before the election in which you see Brexit candidates either being given the carte blanche opportunity to go ahead of the Conservative Party in certain seats. And that would make sense in many of the marginal northern seats, for example, particularly on the coastal areas where, and you saw that in Peterborough. If the Conservative Party did not stand in Peterborough, there's no doubt that the Brexit Party would have beaten Labour there. So in some areas at the moment, you do have a situation if you vote Conservative, you'll get Labour. But equally, there'll be other areas where the numbers will be on the other side. And I think they have to sensibly work out what is best in certain constituencies to ensure that we defeat the threat of a Corbyn coalition.
Well, let's talk about Corbyn in a moment. But then that would also mean that Nigel would demand a seat or seats at the cabinet table, I presume.
Well, I think it would be logical to, if you've got that, you, when you had a pact between, although it was a post-election pact between the Liberal Democrats and the Conservative Party, there was no doubt that you had Liberal Democrats at the table and some key roles as well. And I think you'd have to have some people with key roles in government as well.
Okay, so what about Corbyn? You just mentioned him. Quite a few people are worried that if there is a general election, an early one, that somehow Corbyn could scrape into number 10. Do you see that happening?
Absolutely, I do. And I'm a post-Brexit kind of election in which Boris has guaranteed that we're leaving, Corbyn will lose. But if we're in a situation where you go to the country and there isn't a pact with the Brexit Party, or there's no very clear identifiable route that we actually are leaving, then you're going to get a massive reaction against the Conservative Party from the people in the North. The only movement that's occurred over in Labour Party politics over the past few weeks that has given me some hope that Corbyn will lose a kind of overall majority in the country, and the only way that he could win now is in a pact with the SNP and the Liberal Democrats, is the fact that they virtually said we are a Remain party and stuck their finger up at 4 million working class and lower middle class constituents across the country. And they've said to themselves, we are now a metropolitan middle class, a semi-elitist, university-based organisation.
So he has got a really difficult calculation to make here then, hasn't he? Because whatever happens, we do know, don't we, in the next 6 or 7 months, there is going to be a general election.
Yes, it is a difficult calculation for him. The results that we know at the moment that will be probably definite is that the Liberal Democrats will gain significantly. My estimations, looking and talking to people in polling areas, is that there is a likelihood they could get 40 to 60 seats across the country. So they will take out quite a lot of Conservative seats. That will be taken both from Conservatives and from the Labour Party. And I think you'll see the test of this happening in the by-election in Wales. Whether they win that seat will give them continued momentum.
What do you think the Brexit Party would get if there was a general election and they were standing on their own?
I think they've got a good chance, again, to pick up somewhere in the region of 4 to 6 seats in campaigning really well in some strong areas that they've got. The difficulty at the moment is there will be a Boris bounce for the Conservatives in some of those areas. And that's why I say that in those areas where the Brexit Party are particularly strong, and I would say you will have those areas particularly who voted Leave, that were in areas that were Labour controlled, but with a Remainer Labour MP, those are areas in which Brexit Party would do significantly well. And they have a chance of winning 4 to 6 seats. But you see, again, they'll face this big task of the Conservative Party's votes diminishing and not enough of it shifting through, unless there's, if you're in a situation where Boris now gets this bounce, and I think he will. But damaging to both parties.
I understand that. Let's leave that there for the moment. We're going to take a short break, then I'll be back with more Shooting from the Lip with Stephen Wolfe, ex-Brexit MEP. I want to talk about the new cabinet and particular individuals who are going to be in that. And also I want to move on to the kind of thing that Stephen alluded to at the beginning, which was this mainstream bias against Boris. And of course, Yasmin Alibaya Brown and the disgraceful things she said about Boris's girlfriend over the last few days. Much more to talk about. Also, Blair, Brown, and indeed, John Major, the three unwise monkeys who have entered the ring as well with their criticism. It's all coming up on Shooting from the Lip with me, John Gaunt. Don't dare go away. Back after this short break.
Shooting from the Lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, Shooting from the Lip.
You're back with Shooting from the Lip with me, John Gaunt, on Sputnik International. My special guest today, Stephen Wolfe, former Brexit MEP. Stephen, let's talk about the cabinet. Priti Patel as Home Secretary. That is some appointment. She's impressive, but is she the right person for that job?
Oh, absolutely. She's an impressive individual. I've met Priti on many occasions. Strong, thoughtful, intelligent, and the sort of individual that you need behind you to back you on the tough decisions that Boris will need to make. I mean, she took an enormous amount of flack at the time she was in government over the allegations that she'd illegally met Israelis without announcing it properly. And that was clearly a setup at the time, but it was, you needed to have people in government who were willing to accept that the state of Israel is under threat and that there are friends in the British government. And certainly she is that. And she's taken a huge amount of flack over her stance on immigration, huge amount of flack on her stance on Brexit. So I think she's a great choice and certainly will help to ensure that the big problems that have always been there in the Home Office can be addressed. I just hope that she gets long enough to get the feet under the table to consider some of the real problematical legislation that was being created and can amend the current immigration bill, if she could, to make it more positive for those of us who believe that we have to have a proper managed immigration system, not uncontrolled.
Now, the present or the ex-chancellor, he's done everything he can to derail Brexit, in my opinion. Philip Hammond, he's going, thank God. Sajid Javid to be Chancellor, first Muslim chancellor. Lots of people making a big thing about this. I don't think it is a big thing, but there we are. He's the first Muslim chancellor. What do you make of that? A good appointment?
Well, again, another good appointment. I'm not looking at it in terms of the first Muslim. You know, I'm looking at somebody who, like myself, came off a working class estate with a working class family. His father was a bus driver who studied hard, worked hard, and like myself, also got into the city and then went into politics on a belief that you can make some change. And I think the man who understands the city, which is a very significant element of the income of Britain PLC, and being in that top role where you need to consider taxation, and his natural instinct is that of a conservative that believes in a smaller state is beneficial for the country, which means lower taxation, less regulation on business, opening up the opportunities for employment, and hopefully will be part of a kind of government that encourages trade and once again brings the brightness back into Britain and enables us to grow as a country.
Okay, and there's some breaking news that Dominic Cummings, who I presume you know as well, has just been appointed as the senior advisor to Boris Johnson. Tell everybody who he is.
Well, Dominic Cummings was one of those individuals that effectively was behind the Vote Leave campaign, the official organisation, and he led that campaign to the referendum victory. So he is a key Brexiteer. He is someone that's been attacked consistently since the referendum, maligned in many ways.
Indeed, in that film with Cumberbatch.
Yes, he was in that film in Benedict Cumberbatch. The interesting point, though, is whether it will change the dynamics between a coalition between the Conservatives now and the Brexit Party, because there was no love lost between many of those on Vote Leave and those in the alternative party, which is whether it's UKIP or whether it's the Leave.eu campaign. They just didn't like each other. I think that he is a sensible enough individual to put that behind him and be able to see the bigger picture, which is leaving Brexit and ensuring that this country doesn't have Corbyn And with his political nous and Boris's kind of skills in being able to promote the country, I think we might be able to see that positive vision for Britain outside of Brexit come forward.
Okay, interesting, isn't it, as well, that you're saying you're optimistic. Boris is trying to convince everybody else to be optimistic. Some of the tabloids have picked up on that, particularly The Sun and The Daily Mail. But last night, watching BBC News and indeed Sky News, I'd been out the country for 3 or 4 days. It was like they almost had the black armbands on. They are very upset, the mainstream media, the broadcasters in particular, that Boris is in charge.
I, once again, have this project fear and this idea that we've got a plague of anti-democratic, right-wing, fascistic anti-immigrants in government, and therefore the death of the Liberal Democrats, death of the socialism has come to the country. And it's very clear from mainstream politics since the referendum that there is a snobbishness that has existed in Britain that has come to the fore. There is a view that we know best is at the fore. And because they're not winning, they're becoming more and more miserable. And I think it's a terrible shame for them. Really, if they were just able to see that they had been living in such a big bubble for so long, that the rest of the country had viewed Britain very, very differently. And they seized upon Brexit as a tremendously exciting and energetic opportunity for us to go back out in the world, be seen to be great once more, not Blairite kind of Olympics great, but genuinely feeling positive from the ground upwards. And hopefully, when we finally leave the European Union, they will disregard this misery and start to see that the world isn't imploding, plagues aren't coming, aliens aren't landing, and they're not all going to die of a Boris disease.
Well, you say that, but what do you make, for example, of Blair, Major and Brown? I call them the three unwise monkeys. They've intervened again this weekend. What do you say to them, and what do you make of their kind of warnings?
Well, they were part of the essential problem. They were so wedded to the creation of the European Union as a new country. They were so pessimistic about Britain's opportunity to exist as an independent sovereign state that they were willing to allow much more of our country to be subsumed and controlled by the European Union. That was lazy thinking. I think it's lazy politics. And it's also the projects and politics of fear from themselves. And so I've never taken a great deal of comfort listening to them. Blair started off well, but clearly we could see he was in the thrall of huge corporations who were gaining power, the European Union, and eventually a discredited campaign and war that we saw with the millions of people that were either injured or killed. Then we saw Major, who literally forced people to lose their homes with his disastrous decision over the ERM. And no one seems to remind him how much misery people did when interest rates rose so much and they were literally kicked out on their streets. And as for Gordon Brown, huge decimation of our economy. And then, of course, has the insulting language to say that Boris has only become prime minister elected by a few people in the Conservative Party, yet forgets the fact that's exactly how he became prime minister. So he's hypocritical to the core.
He certainly is. And then we've got people like social commentator, I don't really like to give her publicity, but Yasmin Alibaya-Brown, who put a tweet out calling Boris's girlfriend his mistress and the fact that Boris was still a married man and, you know, looking down her snooty nose at him. And it was like, what was that about? And then that's opened a whole Twitter mob frenzy and this hashtag not my prime minister goes back to this loser's consent. I mean, this is no way for a democracy to behave, is it?
Well, Yasmin Alibaba and her ilk, those who are now being anti-feministic, aren't they? They promote feminism, and yet here they are attacking a woman because she has a relationship with the prime minister because it doesn't suit them. She's the person that has helped divide the nation over race and colour. I'm mixed race, and I am appalled at the way she and others in the Labour Party have divided our country across lines of black and brown against white, and you can't vote for the Conservative Party or the Brexit Party if you are a BAME constituent. But I love the way that she was reprimanded by a black lady who was a nurse who said, "Don't call me a person of colour." I mean, I find these languages that they use deeply insulting. So she has led the division in this country. She knows exactly
what
she's
doing. Hang on a minute, Steve. She promised she would leave if Boris became PM. Some people on Twitter are organising a collection for the airfare. I don't know where she's going to go. I mean, she's a Ugandan Asian who came here and we gave her a home. And this isn't meant to be a Trump moment. If you don't like it, go home. I'm not saying that at all, but she said it herself. So when is she leaving?
Well, there's a huge difference between arguing for change in your country and saying, I don't necessarily like it, and the difference of saying, I like it so much, that dislike it so much that I want it to be as I was somewhere else. And that's where the language of go back home is all about. I think for me, everybody has the right to campaign for the issues that they believe in. She's quite right as an individual to be on television and promote her views. But what I say about her views is, if you think this country is so terrible, and you said if this prime minister is Boris Johnson, I should leave, then you should actually stick by your own words and go. Where you go, I don't mind, I don't care, but stop being so divisive in your language to people in this country. Stop insulting this nation in such a way. Stop creating the framework of hatred, because that's what she's doing.
But why do those on the left, or those who will Remainers, which aren't necessarily all on the left, many of them establishment figures, why can't they accept that they lost? Why don't they just give over now? Why have we got a hashtag, not my prime minister? Why have we got people using the F word, F Boris, F? I mean, you know, a children's author, a Matt Haig, I think his name is. I find it incredible, the venom that's out there. And I think it's stoked up by the BBC and Sly News.
I think it's stoked up by the fact that they have lost and they don't understand what it's like to lose. They don't understand what it's like to be in the levels of poverty of some people across the country had when you had large-scale immigration pushing down wages. They don't understand what it's like to lose and not receive the huge amounts of benefits they get from state cash that goes into their non-governmental organisations or their think tanks. See, they've been cosseted and comforted by years by the way that the state has funded them in one way or another, whether that's through the ability to speak on mainstream media, whether it is, as I say, to receive grants through the like. So they really just can't understand what losing is. And they are showing something that is not characteristically British, being a serious, poor loser. And in doing so, they're creating hatred, John. They are creating division. And they can't be forgiven for that.
Well, I would agree with you there. But just as we finish the show now, I've only got about 60 seconds. How the hell does Boris reunite the country?
Well, he reunites the country first by politically enacting a pact with the Brexit Party and those who believe in a positive vision for Brexit, ensuring that Parliament gets us out on October the 31st, and then proving through his skills in negotiations with Trump and other countries that we can trade and thrive as a vibrant nation. And his character should be able to achieve that, but he needs the backing and support of people like myself and you and others who believe that this country is fantastic, has energy, enthusiasm, and can do tremendously well over the next few decades and beyond.
What a great way to finish the programme. That's Stephen Wolfe. He was a Brexit MEP. We need him back in politics. Let's hope he gets a seat, or at least a candidacy for the Brexit Party. But what did you make of what he had to say? You have been listening to John Gaunt on Sputnik International on Shooting from the Lip. We'll be back with another great guest, this time next week, who won't be afraid to shoot from the lip. Thanks for listening.
Shooting from the Lip.
If you've got a view, I want to hear it. If you agree, I want to hear it. If you disagree, get in touch. Tell me why I'm wrong, but you better have a good argument.
This is Shooting from the Lip.